promotional fee has been paid by the sponsor of this program. For its editorial content, statements, views, and beliefs expressed by the sponsor do not reflect those of WOKV or Cox Media Group.
The Consumer Law Hour is brought to you by Farrah & Farrah.
Good afternoon and a very happy Saturday to you. You are listening to the Consumer Law Hour right here on News 104.5 WOKV. It is a free hour of legal advice brought to you by Farrah and Farrah. I have Eddie here in the studio with me today. It looks like Chuck isn't going to be making it, though.
That's right. That's okay. We'll hold down the fort.
The show is produced
by... Me and you, Tim.
The show is produced by Scott Kushner behind the boards, keeping us honest. Phone lines are open, 904-340-1045, 904-340-1045. Eddie, you said we have some really fun things to talk about today.
Oh, yeah. I've got several topics. We'll, of course, take the phone calls. That's the most important part. But we're going to talk about life insurance policies on bank employees. We're going to talk about exploding e-cigarettes and tanning beds, among other things. But I want to clarify or kind of get back to a question we had last week. We did have a caller near the end of the show. Tim, I want to kind of share the information that we've received over the week so that people can use it later on. But this was a caller who had a job, got a job, was working, doing his job, and, you know, nothing was wrong with that. Was able to perform all the requirements of the position. But he was drug tested, and they found out he was on a particular drug prescribed by his doctor. It's a legal prescription that he received, and his doctor, who prescribed the drug, said, "Hey, it was okay to work in this environment, taking this particular medication." And but however, the doctor for the employer who did the drug testing said, "No, based on this particular type of medication, you cannot perform your job. We don't want you, you know, it's not safe that you do it." And so he was fired. He wasn't fired for not doing the job. He was just fired because they didn't want anybody taking that medication to be around that particular job environment. And he thought that was discriminating against him, and can they do it? And I asked around to a couple of labor lawyers, and they said he could. Even though his doctor says it was okay, it's the employer's responsibility to ensure the safety of the plant and the workers and this particular employee. So based on since it's their responsibility to do that and they're held accountable in the event something goes wrong, then they have a right to not employ that person. So that's the information that we received. If anybody has anything different or has a different perspective, let us know. But that's the answer I got from a labor law lawyer.
That does seem to make sense.
Yeah.
It's all on the employer at that point.
Yeah, just because your doctor says, hey, it's okay to work under, that's just one opinion. The ultimate responsibility falls with the employer. And that's why I guess they made the decision. They just didn't, even though he was able to do it, they didn't want to take that risk.
Well, they're the ones that take the heat if something happens.
Yeah, of course. Then they're criticized for why did you let him run the machine or whatever it was when he was under this kind of medication. So that, I think, is the law in that area. We'll see if anything else comes up. We'll keep you posted.
There you go. Following up, though.
Yes. Okay. Now, this is another interesting topic. These are life insurance policies, and they're called dead peasant policies. I had never heard of them before, and they're secret life insurance policies on the banks use them a lot, and they're allowed. I thought, is this legal? But according to this article, the banking regulations allow the banks to do this to their employees. And what they do is they take out life insurance policies on their employees. And the employee may not even know about it. And the reason this came to light, there was a lady whose husband had been fired from a bank, and she received a letter from the insurance company. It was misaddressed. It should have gone to the bank, but she got it. And it was informing her the bank was getting ready to receive like $4.7 million in life insurance proceeds from the death of this particular employee who wasn't even there anymore. He was fired several years before that. So that's what brought this to light. And apparently the banks can do this. And the reason why they do it, because it makes financial sense to them. They can borrow the money to pay the premiums, and the interest on the money they borrow is deductible. So, it's kind of a deferred income thing. So they keep paying the premium on the life insurance. The employee dies, they collect the benefits, and those are probably tax free, from what I understand, are tax free benefits. So, kind of interesting. It's not just the banks that do it. Other companies are allowed to do it, but the article that I read just talked about banks taking out these life insurance policies on their employees. So I don't know if anybody's in the banking business listening in that is this still going on, or, I mean, is this as prevalent as this article says it is? But this person was only making $70,000 a year in salary.
So any company can do this, though?
Well, no. Typically, the article said, I'm not sure every... I know banks can do it because, according to the banking regulations, they can do it. Now, I don't see why can't other private companies do it, but this article focused on banking, on banks. This particular person that the bank had a $4.7 million policy on was only making $70,000 a year. I mean, I don't know what was going on there, but but they paid on this premium for quite some time, and of course collected the money.
Now, why can an employer take out a life insurance policy on any employee?
Well, there's key man policies. You may have heard of key man. People insure employers do that. I mean, that's pretty well known, but it's a key man policy. It's a policy on your life. Typically, the employer is the beneficiary because you're such a key part of that business. If something happens, they got to have money to kind of continue the business on, hire the right people, or do whatever it takes to keep the business going. But typically, you know about that. That's your business, and you know there's a life insurance policy on your life, and the employer is the beneficiary. And these these type of policies, these secret life insurance policies, the employees do not know that there's a life insurance on them. I mean, I'm sure there are people here in town that are employees that work at banks that don't know that there's a life insurance on their life. So.
You want to go ahead and take a phone call?
Sure.
All right, and phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. You're listening to the Consumer Law Hour, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah. Lori, you are live on the line. What's on your mind?
Hi, Esquire Farrah.
Hey, Laura, how you doing?
Pretty good.
Thanks.
I just wanted to mention to you that John Grisham wrote a whole book on this.
Oh, he did?
Yes, he did. You got to read everything he writes because he's good.
I mean, am I correct in what I'm talking about?
They wrote, when I finished reading the book, the guy that when they went to go and collect, he used artistic license, but it was very, very good. And when I got done reading his book, I went and researched it. And Winn-Dixie and Walmart got caught writing these dead peasant policies. The insurance commissioner, by definition, frowns upon them because there's no insurable interest. So they have to take the risk. And not only did Walmart and Winn-Dixie were writing the dead peasant policies, they were using them as collateral to get extra leverage. So it went through and through from the research that I did when I read his book years ago.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, so it's more than just the banks do. The article that I read just talked about banks.
Right.
And that the banks are allowed to do it. Legally, they can do it. So according to the regulations, they have an insurable interest.
Well, if you're a key employee, that's correct. But once you leave, you're no longer a key employee.
Well, this particular case, this guy had been gone for years.
Right.
He was fired from the bank.
Right. And I'm wondering did they ever pay the policy?
Paid it to the bank.
They paid it to the bank, but the insurance commissioner, nobody went and
As far as I know, the bank got the money. I mean, the only way the widow found out about it is she accidentally got the letter.
Correct.
It was a misaddressed. That's how she found out about it.
Correct. And according to John Grisham's book, it also gives you a motivation to get rid of somebody if you need the money.
Okay.
And we all know about 2008 and the banks and all of that stuff.
Yeah, no, you're right.
It's all most interesting to me. But it also points out why we as a community have to have regulations because greed has no guilt.
Yeah, it doesn't. And no limit.
Exactly.
And no limit.
And criminal minds, bigger. You'll never survive if you got to compete with them.
Well, I know, but these are not, I mean, these are people who work supposedly within the system. I mean,
sure.
I mean, they've got a bank. They go get up. You have to understand the people who have the power can pass regulations to favor them. So the banks.
That was what the whole Alec thing was about.
Right.
And we as community members, all of us, and I, you know, and especially our lawyers are supposed to be our advocates. And it's one thing I said on another station about a month ago, is that no justice, no peace is not a loose social contract. it's a reality.
Yeah.
So
really appreciate it, Lori. I have to pick up that book.
Thank you for doing your show.
No,
last
thanks a lot.
Show was outstanding.
No, we love doing it, and I'll have to get that book. I didn't know he had written some on it.
You'll have to read everything, John Grisham. Yeah. He does a good job.
Okay, thanks.
Bye.
Thanks, Lori.
I like what she just said right there. Lori just said, lawyers as advocates.
Yeah. And, these 10, you have to have a, I'll have to get the book, but it's more widespread. I mean, according to her, other companies in town are doing it.
That'd be
an interesting news article. WOKV ought to look into something like that. That sounds like another kind of an interesting employers taking life insurance policies out on employees.
Yeah, I'll mention to Stephanie Brown, our investigative reporter.
Let's talk about something different.
Yeah. Do you want to take a phone call?
Oh, sure.
All right. Let's go ahead over to Bill in Mandarin. Bill, you are live on the Consumer Law Hour. What's on your mind, Bill?
Hey, Bill.
Hey, guys. Now, I own a small business. We've been in business for about 15 years now. And it's a retail-type business where people are in and out of it. And we also do a lot of service in the community. Every morning when I get up and I go to work anymore, I'm almost scared to the point where I think I need to sell the business because seems like every time I turn around, there's an issue that's coming up, or there's so much liability involved in owning a small business these days. And it's like, I know there's justification for lawsuits and stuff, but there's also a lot of frivolous stuff that goes on. So I guess from your viewpoint and what you guys do, how do I protect myself as a small business owner? What are the things I should be looking for?
Are you incorporated? Do you have a corporation, or do you own it individually?
We're absolutely incorporated.
Okay, so you're incorporated. Now, a lot of people think, I'm not a corporate lawyer. I'm a personal injury lawyer, but I've dealt with some of these issues, so I'm going to give you from the personal injury perspective. If you have a corporation, you got to rent it like a corporation. A lot of times people set up a corporation, but they rent it like their own individual business. And a lot of times they get sued personally because the other side tries to show this guy's not running it like a corporation. He's running like a personal, individually owned business, and they pierce the corporate veil. They get past the corporation. So what you want to do if you have a corporation, you know, run it like a corporation, have minutes, have meetings, keep notes of what the corporation's doing, have a corporate, you know, manual, and run it like a corporation, even though you're a small business. That way no one can ever come by and say, listen, he's not. It's not a corporation. Let's go after Bill personally. So once you got a corporation, that gives you the most a good piece of insulation. Of course, having insurance, and you also having I don't know what kind of business you're in, but having an umbrella insurance policy, which is not expensive to purchase, but umbrella coverage covers almost everything that you could get involved in. And it's not expensive, and it's something you should have if you're a business owner. So the corporation, umbrella insurance, if I knew more about your business, I could probably tell you some other things to do in terms of how things should be titled and so forth. But that's kind of my, from the plaintiff side, from the guy who sues, or makes claims against businesses and people, that's what I can, how you can protect yourself.
Okay.
I'll tell you, the one thing you can do if you're married, here's the thing. If the business is in your name alone, if the business is, but you own, everything you own is with your wife together, nobody can execute against anything that you own jointly. That's an easy way to stop anybody from touching anything you have.
Right.
That's
okay.
All right.
That's solid advice. I appreciate that.
Yeah, man. Thanks. If you have any questions or if you want to get more detail, call me at the office. I know you want to divulge a lot of stuff over the phone, but I don't mind talking to you. If you want to call 396-5555, I'll be there all week next week, and we can talk about it some more.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks.
Appreciate your show. Thank you.
I appreciate that phone call, Bill. And phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. John, I see you sitting on hold right there, but we have to go to a break, and I want to make sure we have enough time to get to your call when we get back. So, John, as soon as we get back from this break, Eddie will go ahead and answer your question. Phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. You're listening to the Consumer Law Hour right here on News 104.5 WOKV, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah. Go to farrahandfarrah.com.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to the Consumer Law Hour right here on News 104.5 WOKV. My name is Tim Tompkins. I have Eddie here in the studio with me. Chuck is gone this week. Scott Kushner behind the boards, answering the phones, producing the show, and keeping us honest. And the show's all about you. It's free hour legal advice brought to you by Fair and Fair. Let's not waste any time. John in Arlington, thank you so much for staying on hold, man. We appreciate you.
Hello?
Hey, John, go ahead.
Hey, great. Hey, I got a small problem, and I just want to know which way should I go about taking care of this. On July 27th, that was last Friday, my power went out in my apartment. So at first I said, maybe it was something wrong that I didn't pay the bill. I went down to JEA, and they tell me that the city had a flag on the account due to the fact that the complex needs to replace one of the lines that's going to the meter. There was a faulty line. Now, prior to this, I had been to the complex before and tell them that I can be watching TV or anything in the house, and all of a sudden the lights will go out. And unusually weird that I can, the stove light and the refrigerator light stayed on. So I went to the complex and complained to them about that unusual situation, and they in return told me it was my responsibility to contact JEA. But in return, they did have someone to replace the meter. Meanwhile, on July 27th, my lights go out, and JEA tells me that it's not my billing problem. The problem is that the complex needs to replace this line, and the city have a flag on it. Well, on throughout that weekend, no one came to contact me. And I, at this point, no one told me anything about it. On the 25th, I went there on Monday to the rental office because I done stayed in the apartment all weekend with no lights. Of course, I had water, but no lights. They still gave me their information saying that they were not informed of the problem, but that JEA had sent them an email prior to this saying that they have X amount of time to correct that issue as far as my line was concerned. Now, again, no power. On the 27th, I go to the office. They state that they have someone that's going to come out and look at it for me. Okay, now I'm still in the house now. This is 4 or 5 days. It's been hot this week. Now, on the 30th, which is today, I go there. No one is there to tell me anything or give me any advice. And I have thrown away everything in my refrigerator as far as food is concerned, and I have been without power for at least over a week.
Right. So, are you the only one? Is this an apartment complex or just like a
duplex? Yes, it's an apartment complex. Now, I did find out that the gentleman above me is having similar problems, but his house had not been flagged. His apartment had not been flagged, and it's about 8 units in this building.
Okay, and are you the only unit that does not have power?
Exactly.
Okay.
And it's been about 8 days now. So okay. The question I have is, right, would I not pay those days of rent, or how would I go about?
There's a process. Okay, I don't know. I can't tell you the exact process. I know there's a process that you pay your rent to the registry of the court, and the judge determines whether they get paid or not. But obviously, they're responsible to provide you power. You should not have to pay rent for that period of time that you're without a place to live. That's a pretty much clear cut issue or clear-cut case here. So what I would recommend, let me see, you know, you could probably do it on your own, but I know that Jack's Area Legal Aid has a department that helps people in your situation. Okay. Why don't you give Scott your phone number? I know somebody there that I'll call on Monday, and I'll get you in touch with somebody.
I appreciate that.
Who will help you do it, because you shouldn't have to pay the rent. That money should go back to you because it's their responsibility to make sure you have power coming to your apartment.
All right.
Have you talked to anybody in the city about it, or just JEA? Is anybody else?
I just talked only with JEA about it because they said that they're not going to cut this power on, even though these guys said they had an electrician to look at it, said everything was okay.
Yeah,
they said they're not going to cut it on until they get an inspector out here to look at the line being replaced.
Right. All right. Okay. And the landlord has not told you when that's going to happen?
Exactly. All they're telling me is that they have someone looking into it. But again, I only had one visitor into the apartment that I was here during the day to see. And again, like I said, this has been
8 days
now, and they're looking for rent for next month.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think
how do I handle that?
Yeah, I know. You want to hold off on doing that right now, because the first is coming up on Monday, and what do you have, 3 days to pay it? Is that how it?
Well, through the 5th.
Through the 5th, okay.
Right.
Well, let's talk. Let's talk tomorrow, Monday, and then we'll try to figure out a way to handle it.
Okay, but, I really appreciate
it. Yeah,
that.
Don't pay the rent till I talk to you on Monday. Okay, great.
And I give him my number.
Gift's got your number. Thanks, John.
All right,
appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Yeah.
What an awful position to be in.
It's the heat of the summer.
Uh-huh.
There's no power.
All your food in your fridge.
You have no light at night unless you got a flashlight.
No air conditioning.
And
I mean, that's not
landlord,
right.
Oh, this landlord, I mean, I don't know if the staff, I don't do that kind of work. I'm going to find out. I know he doesn't have to pay the rent for that period of time, but there should be something additional on top of that.
Oh, yeah. At the very least, the amount of money that he paid for the food that all went bad.
And they should put him up in a hotel or somewhere where there is air conditioning until they can get back in there.
Yeah. Completely agree. Well, we are coming up on a hard break right now. Bob, Terry, and Stacey, I see on the line. As soon as we get back,
we'll get to you.
We got a look at your news, weather, and traffic. A look at the roads coming up with Trish Hobby. You're listening to the Consumer Law Hour, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah. The show is produced by Scott Kushner. So very much for sticking with us. You are listening to the Consumer Law Hour, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah, each and every single Saturday at noon, right here on News 104.5 WOKV. Chuck's gone today. I have Eddie here in the studio with me. The phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. My name's Tim Tompkins. The show is produced by Scott Kushner. Let's go ahead and go straight to the phone calls. We're going to take it over to Terry first, right?
Yep.
Terry, you are live on the Consumer Law Hour. What's up?
Hi there. Can you get my call?
Yes.
I was in an auto accident, and my doctor referred me for some physical therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to go to the consultation, and they first asked me if I had an attorney. And then the next step is, did I sign a letter of protection?
Right.
And because they say their policy is that they don't take letters of protection. So I'm just trying to figure out what that means.
Okay.
If I sign it, what does that mean?
All right. Did you sign the letter of protection?
No, I didn't.
But the rehab facility wants the letter of protection, right?
Yeah, they just want to know if I signed one.
Well, why can't they look in their file to see if you signed it?
Because they didn't know that it was related to an auto accident.
Okay, so they want you to sign a letter of protection for them, correct?
No, they just want to know if I signed one through my attorney.
Okay. That's an odd question, because usually the facility that is providing the treatment asks you for a letter of protection. So if you go to Dr. X, usually it's Dr. X's office that wants to get the letter of protection. And what a letter of protection does, the typical one, you know, so I haven't seen yours, but it states that in the event there is a settlement, you are not allowing the lawyer to disperse the funds unless that medical facility gets paid. So they're going to take the money out of your settlement to get paid. And it requires the lawyer to hold that money back. That's what it does.
I can understand that now.
But typically, if there's not a settlement, I have to read the letter of protection. Each one's different. It's like a contract. There's a million of them, different versions. But typically, what the letter of protection does, it gives them the right to file for their benefits, for their payment from PIP, from your auto insurance, and then the balance would be paid by you at the time of settlement. So,
yeah, see, they don't want that. They want their money now.
Yeah,
so
but a lot of them will hold off if you provide a letter of protection, because that way they know they're getting paid out of the settlement.
Okay.
You see the difference? So they may say they want their money up front now, like when you go in, pay as you go. But a lot of these medical providers, if you sign the letter of protection, they'll forego requiring you to pay up front, and they're willing to wait till the case settles.
Yeah, they're not. So that's where I'm stuck. They're saying they're not willing to wait.
Okay.
So.
I know, but there are rehab facilities that are willing to take letters of protection that are willing to wait.
Okay.
So maybe you can talk to your lawyer and ask him to recommend a different place, or maybe there's somewhere else. I mean, he can help you find a place that was willing to wait, provide you the therapy, and then get paid when the case settles.
Okay, that makes sense. Sure. I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Terry. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate that phone call, Terry.
Yeah, these letters of protection, I mean, they're a double-edged sword. They're a good thing because they allow people to get treatment when they don't have money. I mean, you know, sometimes you got to get well, you got to get back to work. You need certain physical treatments like physical therapy to help you get back in the workplace. But a lot of these facilities want you to pay up front. But a lot of places will accept a letter of protection, which means, hey, we'll treat you. We'll give you all the treatment you need. But when the case settles, you got to make sure we get paid. So it works.
Makes sense.
Yep.
All right, taking it over to Stacy in Middleburg. Stacy, you are live on the Consumer Law Hour.
Hey, Stacy.
Hi. Thank you.
Sure.
For taking my call. There's just so many issues. I've been denied disability twice, and the last time I had an attorney, and strangely, he dropped my case 2 weeks before I was supposed to go to court, and I was not the only client. I guess there were several clients that he sent letters to. I heard through the grapevine. And so on the way there, I was almost in an accident. And so needless to say, I was a train wreck when I showed up at court. And I was probably denied on that basis and maybe one or two other things. I found out later that some doctors failed to bring out records. The other question is, well, I needed to know if I should look into getting an attorney, and if you know of one in my area, if you're allowed to do that. And the second question is, 2 years ago I had a surgery, kind of an emergency partial hysterectomy, and at the same time I asked him, since I was beginning to have incontinence, I asked him if there was anything that was good that had good studies that showed that could help me so that I would never have to even think about this again. Well, apparently, whatever he put there called the bladder sling, everything has been 10 times worse than it ever was. I've had nothing but one problem after another. I have no health insurance. I haven't been able to work. My health has gotten increasingly bad since that surgery. I was already having so many issues from running my body like a Mack truck for many years. So now I'm in a situation where I'm no insurance, not working, thank goodness for great kids. And they take wonderful care of me. They're trying their best, but I don't want to be any more of a burden than I have to. And I want to work. My problem is I'm not able to keep a job because of my situation. And I've lost three jobs in the last 6 months.
Have you worked in the last year? Have you been working?
Pardon me?
Have you worked in the last year?
Yes.
I think that's probably on the disability. And I'm trying to take it a step at a time. The disability, you said you were a lawyer dropped you before going to the hearing?
Yes, but this was 2 years ago, and this is, I'm so glad you brought that back up, because I almost forgot one of the most important things that I wanted to tell you. I've reapplied, I've appealed my case, and I sent two letters of appeal and heard nothing in return. I finally called them and say, what's going on? They said, we've never received the letters. Well, I researched it, I found out I sent the letters to the wrong place. I put them in the wrong return envelope. But it seems like someone dropped a ball, so I'm hoping there again, maybe if I get an attorney, it will help. But you're right, I probably should try not. Well, I don't think I can work at all anymore. After losing these last three jobs, I'm humiliated enough.
Yeah, well, okay. But the thing is, you have to be unable to get the Social Security disability, you know, based on your education and so forth. They look at what you're able to do if you're able to be employed. Typically, people who have, they've been out of work for a while. I mean, I don't know what the rules are. There are people in my office that handle these kind of cases, but it's from my understanding you have to be off work a year, or you can't be able to work for a year in order to get the benefits. So I think a doctor, it's a lot of times it's what the doctors say and what they put in their reports. So maybe the lawyer saw something in the report that the doctor said that did not help you. I mean, these guys know what to look for. That was there. Maybe there's something in the report that allowed you to work, or maybe you didn't believe you were disabled. So that's why he probably didn't think you had a winning case. But things can change. Doctors can change your opinion. So I think, first of all, you got to get a lawyer to handle the Social Security case. You really do. On your own, you really don't have much of a chance. The problem with the Social Security disability now, these judges who make these decisions are under a lot of pressure not to approve as many people as they have before. If you look at the statistics, fewer and fewer people, are being approved for Social Security disability. You can look online. Don't have to take my word for it. Go look at the approval rates. Look at them in Florida. They're going down. Okay? Not up. So that's why you need a lawyer, because it's getting tougher and it's getting that tough now to get the benefits. Secondly, you're talking about, now if it's a medical device you're talking about, there's a 4-year statute of limitations that you have to file something. But if it's a medical malpractice claim, because you said your surgery was 2 years ago, it's a 2-year statute of limitations. But did he actually put a medical device or a product? Was a product part of that surgery? Hello? Oh.
Looks like we lost Stacey.
Yeah, we lost her. Okay, well, I think I know her questions because she talked a while about it. Mm-hmm. She was talking about a surgery she had a couple of years ago, and she thinks something went wrong. She had this incontinence issue. It's a 2-year statute of limitation if she wanted to make a claim against the doctor. And it looks like she said it was 2 years ago. But if the doctor installed some sort of medical device that malfunctioned, she's got 4 years to file that lawsuit. So that's kind of what I can glean from what she said.
Yeah, so I guess, Stacey, if you are still listening, you can always
call me at the office, yep, so we can go into some more detail about it.
396-5555. That's 396-5555. Yeah.
But these Social Security disability claims are getting tougher and tougher, Tim.
I've heard.
I mean, they're really getting... You can go online. The government keeps the statistics on who's getting approved and who's not, and you'll see the percentages are really going down.
Yeah.
So you really got to have all your ducks in a row when you go to the hearing.
I know somebody right now that's trying to...
Yeah.
Go through the process, and it's been a nightmare.
Yeah,
for
you've got to make sure that, there's stuff they hold against you, you know. If you have a drinking problem, they hold that against you. If you got other issues, they hold that against you. So they're trying to find ways not to pay that money.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it in the results.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Let's go ahead and go over to Bob. Bob, hey, thanks so much for holding, man. You are live, Bob, on the Consumer Law Hour.
Bob, you there?
All right, Bob, put you back on hold. Let's go over to Linda. Linda in Oceanway, what's on your mind?
Thank you, Eddie, for taking my call. My question is, I have some, can I say the insurance company that's giving me a problem?
It don't make it. It's just an insurance company.
It's State Farm.
Okay.
And they are requesting that branches over one of my rentals, which is about approximately 15 feet high, that the branches be cut from hanging over the house.
Yep.
But the thing about it is these branches are coming from, it's not on my property. The house is on each side of my house.
Mm-hmm.
And do I have any right to request the homeowners from those houses to have these branches hanging over my roof cut?
Again, I'm not a landlord. I'm not a real estate lawyer, but it's my understanding that if they cover your land or on trust, they're not trust, but they're located on your property, you have a right to remove that branch that's over your property.
No, they're not on my property. The tree is on my neighbor's property.
Yeah, I know, but the branches are on your property.
Right. Yeah, so I don't want to pay for it. I request that they pay for it since it's on their property?
I don't know. I'll tell you, that's a good question. I can talk to a real estate lawyer this week if you want to leave your phone number with Scott.
Okay.
I know that you have the right to move them. I don't know if you can require them to remove them. Okay.
Okay.
At their cost. But the State Farm,
if they're not directly over, my house is like 15 feet high over the roof.
Well, it's going to cost some money to do it. I know what you're saying, but I know the insurance companies can do that. They can require you to take certain action for them to insure the property unless you want to go to a different company and see if they're...
I'm already insured. I know. They wanted a new roof. I gave them the new roof. Now they're coming back with this
right.
other...
Well, they can do that. Yeah. I mean, they do that.
I know.
So your question is, who has to pay for the removal of the branches? And,
correct.
So leave your number with Scott, and that's a question I'll follow up this week, and I'll get you an answer.
Thank you so much.
Sure. Thanks a lot.
I appreciate that.
Yeah,
Linda.
I think that's an interesting question. It's their tree, but the tree is growing over their land. I know she has the right to remove them. The question is, can you force the other side to pay for that removal? Yeah. That's the issue.
Hey, let's go ahead and check back in on Bob. Hey, Bob, are you on the line?
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you today?
You're good. Go ahead.
The call you guys were talking about earlier, Eddie had mentioned the gentleman who did not pass the drug screen and was not hired at that particular job.
Well, he didn't pass. They just found out he was taking a prescription. It's not he failed anything. They just discovered he was on a prescription medication, and they didn't want him working there.
No, that's not exactly what happened. It was a pre-employment physical. He was a temporary employee trying to get full-time employment.
Is that what the facts were?
Yes.
Okay. Well, he was working there. The point was
he was working there as a temporary employee.
Right. Right.
When the occupational physician would not clear him, they said he was unsuitable for employment. They based that off of an ANSI standard that says heavy equipment operators cannot be on any type of a controlled substance. Mm-hmm. And that's where that whole thing comes from. Outside of the liability on the company and on the liability of the physician, if they let that go through. But they're basing all that information off of ANSI standards. Mm-hmm. And we've seen this probably 3 or 4 times in the last couple of years where this has come up with pre-employment trying to hire people. And they turn around, they go back to their personal physician and get a letter that says they can operate or they can do their job fine on these medications. And it's just a shame that personal physicians are willing to do this.
Yeah, I agree. That's why the employer, the ultimate responsibility falls on the employer. That's why they're able to do what their doctor tells them to do.
Exactly. You know, the employer wanted to hire the gentleman. They really did, but. You know, when the occupational physician said, look, I'm not taking liability for this.
Yeah, because if something goes wrong and then the doctor who said he could work is not going to be responsible. It's the employer who allowed him to work in that situation that's going to take the be responsible.
Yeah, but that's how that whole thing came up. That wasn't a thing where he was working and they terminated him because he was taking a prescription medication. It was a pre-employment thing.
It was my understanding he was already working for a while there at that place position.
He was there for 30 days as a temporary employee, and then when he went for the employment physical, that's when all this.
But I think they can do it even if you're a current employee. I mean, if you're fully employed and you've been there for 10 years, and all of a sudden you're on this new prescription medication, and they don't like it because you can't. It's going to affect your ability to work around this heavy equipment or whatever it is. They can still let you go at that point also.
Yeah, exactly. And it's unfortunate. So many people now have been on medication for so long, they function normally. And they think that because they can function normally, that's acceptable. But it's not going to fly with the liabilities.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
All right. So it looks like we have George still on the line. But, George, we have to take a break right now. I want to make sure we can get to your phone call as soon as we get back.
And Stacey.
Stacey?
Okay, got it.
Okay.
No, I'm getting mixed up here. too many calls coming in. I got it.
Throw me for a loop. All right, we're going to go ahead and take a break, but George, we will get to your phone call as soon as we get back. You're listening to Consumer Law Hour, brought to you by Farrah & Farrah. Hey, welcome back to the Consumer Law Hour right here on News 104.5 WOKV, brought to you by Farrah & Farrah. I have Eddie here in the studio with me. Chuck, he's gone this week, but you got a lot of calls, though.
We'll track him down for next week. Don't worry about that, Tim.
That's right. We got a little bit of time coming up left.
We'll get him here.
Looks like we do have one phone call. We're going to take just a moment before we get to that. Eddie, before we do, though, anything you want to talk about?
No, let's take the phone call. I mean, if you got it there.
We should wait.
Okay. All right. Well, I was going to talk about tanning beds. There's been a lot of talk. I mean, we've seen them. They're everywhere. And the FDA now has stepped in and now reclassified tanning beds as a class 2 type product, which means it's got to be pre-approved or it's got to have a pre-market review by the FDA. And that's because there's a lot of scientific evidence out there that links tanning beds with skin cancer. The ultraviolet radiation that comes off these tanning beds causes skin cancer. They're telling, the FDA now is saying, anybody under 18, don't do it under any circumstances. Go into a tanning bed or a booth. And if you have a or anybody over 18 that has a family history of cancer, stay away from them. So hopefully, I mean, I don't really see these warnings anywhere. They're everywhere. I see them at gyms and spas, and people go to them, but they're dangerous. And probably the best thing is to stay away from them.
And you can get burnt.
And you can get burnt.
We do have that phone call. Do you want to go to it?
Sure, let's go ahead.
All right. Hey, George, thanks so much for calling back in, man. We appreciate you.
Hey, George.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, man. What you got?
How are you doing, Eddie?
Good, man.
Hey, anyway, the question I have is I work for a small company, 4 employees, and about 15, 20 years ago, I didn't know this, but my employer took out an insurance, life insurance policy on me as I'm a key employee. And after so many years, he sold the company to a new owner. And when this previous owner took the policy with him, moved out of state, and I didn't was even unaware that the policy that there was a policy on me, but the new owner.
Oh man, George, you're going to have to call back next week,
man. That's a great story. I got to hear the rest of this, man.
So George, if you're still listening, call back next week.
We want to hear about it.
That's right. You'll be back here at noon next Saturday, Eddie?
Yeah, man.
All right.
I want to hear George, man. I'll be back.
Don't forget to call in, George, 904-340-1045. You did just listen to another episode of the Consumer Law Hour brought to you by Farrah and Farrah. Eddie and Chuck, my name's Tim Tompkins. The show is produced by Scott Kushner. Stay with us.